Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Welcome to the Latin American History Podcast. Episode 96, The Conquest of Chile, Part 4. When we left off, Valdivia was in the ascendancy and was turning his eye even further southwards. What he didn't know, however, that this would take him deep into the lands of the Mapuche, and that the Mapuche would be one of the most difficult people to conquer in all of Latin America. During the initial months of his expedition, his command had been shaky. There was doubt that Chile could provide the colonists with anything they considered to be of worth, and there were challenges for his control. Having successfully outmaneuvered his main rival, De La Hoz, and now having achieved a good measure of success, solidifying his settlements and leading his men to lands much better than they had believed existed in Chile, these issues seemed to have largely gone away. His control and support, however, wasn't set in stone. If things started to turn bad, the potential for discontent, which lay dormant, could always reactivate and start to cause him problems again. There were some who felt that his relentless desire for expansion as quickly as possible was too severe. It was putting the colonists under unnecessary pressure and spreading their forces too thin. Having founded so many settlements now, each one was defended by a small force, and the problems this caused were highlighted by a series of small rebellions by indigenous peoples. They weren't huge organized affairs, but they did force individual Spaniards to abandon their encomiendas, and they made the rest of the colony nervous that larger attacks might follow. Spanish soldiers were dispersed even further when more metals were found in the countryside which surrounded Penco. Settlers started venturing out to make their fortune, and three new forts were founded to protect them. A ship was also sent to explore further down the coast, and it reached the Straits of Magellan, providing Valdivia with a complete understanding of the land which lay ahead of him, but also removing more men from the defence of the colony. Mapuche groups started smuggling weapons into settlements, and then surprising the colonists by attacking them from the inside. They successfully forced the Spanish to abandon one of their new forts, and Spanish leaders grew increasingly nervous that something serious was about to happen. Valdivia was forced to put expansion efforts on hold, instead heading back to these new forts. The remainder of our story covers what is known as the Arauco War. This is the end of Valdivia's expansion. From now on, events consist of a great struggle between the Spanish and the Mapuche. To tell it, we need to introduce the three most prominent Mapuche leaders. The first was Colo-Colo. Colo-Colo was already an old man when the war started, and was said to be well respected by the rest of his people. His word carried weight, and he was instrumental in bringing the different Mapuche groups together to put aside their differences and drive out the Spanish. His role then was not that of a military commander, but as an advisor and diplomat. He is still remembered in Chile, and perhaps the most successful football club in the country is named after him. One of the two men who actually led the Mapuche into battle was Caupolicán, Papolican was possibly Colo Colo's nephew, but we don't know much about his life before the Arauco War. The other battle leader was Lautaro. His story is interesting. He had been captured by the Spanish at the age of 11, and once they trusted him, he became a servant in their army. This took him around his homeland, witnessing the Spanish conquests and the way in which they dealt with those who resisted. With remarkable maturity considering his young age, he is said to have shown no sign of his true feelings, but with each passing year, his hatred of the Spanish grew. He studied their tactics, learning a lot about how they fought, and therefore how they could be defeated. The Spanish are said to have liked him, and he earned their trust, thus gaining access to even more useful information about how their army functioned. At around the age of 18, he decided that it was time to take action. He slipped away on horseback and went south to join the Mapuche, who the Spanish had not yet conquered. He quickly proved to be not only useful because of his insider knowledge, but also a natural leader. He trained the Mapuche in horse riding, something he had learnt from the Spanish, and which proved to be extremely useful in the upcoming war. He also developed a network of spies among the Mapuche who remained within the Spanish colony. He instructed them to pretend to be harmless. Some played the part of drunks, and others pretended not to speak Spanish, so that they could overhear tactical conversations. Lautaro is also well remembered in Chile and beyond. His name has come to be fairly common in the southern South American countries. Perhaps the most notable person bearing his name is the Argentina and Inter Milan footballer Lautaro Martinez. With the decision made to start the war against the Spanish, Caupolicán was made the Mapuche military leader, and Lautaro was to be his second in command. It had been Lautaro who led that first successful attack against the Spanish fort. Knowing that this would draw Valdivia up to respond, he laid an ambush. The plan worked perfectly. Valdivia arrived with a smaller force than he would have liked, because his troops were dispersed around the various settlements. As he was inspecting the empty ruins, Lautaro and his men emerged from the forest to attack. He had cleverly divided his soldiers into groups to disguise their numbers and draw their enemies into a succession of separate ambushes. The Spanish managed to fight off one wave, only to find themselves surprised by another. This happened several times, and it became clear that the only option the Spanish had was to try to retreat. Just as they began doing this, a final group of hidden Mapuche soldiers emerged, and they turned the retreat into a rout. Instead of trying to loot the baggage caravan, the Mapuche were determined to wipe out the soldiers. The fact that they now had access to horses and knowledge of how to use them was also important. The Spanish horses were exhausted from the fighting, but those being ridden in this final wave of Mapuche soldiers were fully rested, having not taken part in the battle so far. Not a single Spaniard survived. Everyone who was captured was killed, and that included Valdivia. There are lots of grisly stories about Valdivia's death, each one more gruesome than the last. It is pretty certain that he was captured and killed, but whether any of the exact methods detailed in these stories are true is unclear. As none of the Spanish survived to tell the story, the accounts are written by people who were not there, so it's hard to know if they have any truth. If you like horror stories, though, you can look them up quite easily. Valdivia might have been finished, but this was only the beginning of the war. Command of the colony passed to a man named Villagra. The precedent set by Valdivia's last battle characterized this first phase of the war. Lautaro led his men to fight Villagra near Penco, winning another decisive victory and forcing the Spanish to retreat north. Penco was abandoned, as was everything south of that settlement. Villagra retreated to Santiago. The Mapuche did not follow them. While they were able to create an organized army, their culture did not have a tradition of professional soldiers, dedicated to fighting and nothing else. This meant that they had to go back and look after their crops. Apparently the weather that year was characterized by a lack of rain, which made their farming work even more necessary. This didn't seem to matter too much. They had driven the Spanish back, and they were confident that they would be able to repeat their victories when the time came. Yagra, however, was able to use this time to regroup and plan a counter-offensive.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
A bit later, when he was ready, he marched down and re-established Penco and the other settlement, Valdivia. He launched a scorched earth campaign in which he destroyed everything he found belonging to the Mapuche. He also inadvertently brought disease with him, and combined with the famine he instigated by burning crops, the Mapuche were badly hit. Some estimates say that they lost up to 400,000 people over the next couple of years. They didn't stop fighting, however, and they were assisted by the fact that some of the indigenous peoples to the north launched their own rebellions. These were not as ferocious, but they did create a distraction which drew Spanish troops away for a time. When Villagra attempted to refound Concepcion, Lautaro attacked it, and the few Spaniards who survived had to escape by boat. He then turned his attention to Santiago. He crossed the Biobío River and into the territory of the Picunche people. Some joined him and rebelled against the Spaniards who had conquered them, but the Mapuche were apparently harsh in their treatment of those who refused to help. This would cost Lautaro later. The one upside to the loss of their settlements for the Spanish was that their forces were now concentrated in Santiago. Lautaro built a fort nearby and began harassing his enemy. Villagra gathered his army up and tried to take it, but was unable to. The Mapuche did suffer heavy losses, however, and so Lautaro retreated southwards anyway to use the river Maule as a means of defence. He was quickly chased and pushed further back to the Itata River. Meanwhile, Caupolicán was leading another army, and Villagra went to meet him. It's unclear if this was a deliberate tactic, but the result was that Caupolicán's army acted as a diversion. I'm not sure if he and Villagra even ended up fighting a battle, but Lautaro took advantage of the situation to march on undefended Santiago. It seems that he may have been able to destroy it, but as he approached, he found himself confronted by his non-Mapuche allies and the local caciques. They had had enough of his mistreatment, with one cacique supposed to have told him that he was acting just like the Spanish. He paused to try and resolve the situation, but another local cacique gave his location to the Spanish, who were able to surprise him. The Mapuche lost the resulting battle badly, and Lautaro was killed in the fighting. While the sources seem to cast Lautaro as the main protagonist in the Arauco War, at least until his death, Caupolicán was involved, being present at some of the battles, and he was still the overall commander, even if Lautaro seems to have been organizing things on the front lines. Now, though, he was in complete control. At around the same time, news about what was happening in Chile had reached Peru, and a new governor was assigned to fight the war. He was sent down with a large number of soldiers, and so now both sides had new commanders. Mendoza, the new Spanish leader, had Villagra arrested and sent to Peru. It seems a bit unfair, to be honest, and it looks like the only reason for doing it was to remove a rival for control of Chile. Mendoza sailed down to Penco, re-established it yet again, and fought off the Mapuche attempts to drive him away. More soldiers marched from Santiago, and when they arrived, he began moving out into the countryside. The first big battle was at a place named Lagunillas, and apparently it was a tough one, but the Spanish won. Mendoza was clearly a very talented commander, both in battle, but also in terms of using trickery to achieve his aims. He built two new fortified settlements in Mapuche territory, Asorno and Cañete. He fought off a surprise attack at Miarapue and prepared the defence of Cañete when Caupolicán came to attack it. Caupolicán's plan was to besiege them and starve them out. Mendoza, however, had won a local captured cacique over to his side, and together they hatched a plan. The cacique would approach the Mapuche and pretend to secretly work for them. He would tell them that he could quietly open the town gates and let them in to massacre the Spanish. In actual fact, though, the Spanish would be expecting them and would mount an ambush. Everything went to plan. Caupolicán believed that the cacique was tricking the Spanish, not him, but it was his army which was massacred. Caupolicán managed to escape, but he was captured after another battle soon afterwards. He was killed, and the Mapuche leadership passed to Colo Colo. Since Lautaro's death, things had not gone well. Although Colo Colo was a great political leader, he wasn't a general, and he was too old to be leading troops anyway. He decided to make peace with the Spanish and to accept their settlement of Mapuche lands. If you had to pick one point where South Central Chile and Mapuche territory was incorporated into the Spanish Empire, this would probably be it. However, that doesn't mean that the region wouldn't be independent at times, and Mapuche resistance was far from over. Colo Colo organized a rebellion just 2 years later, with Caupolicán's son leading the army. This one was short-lived, and both were killed in the same battle, but it just kept going on and on, a continuous succession of fights. This is one of those occasions where it's hard to know where to end this series, but this is probably the neatest place to close things. I will, however, demonstrate what I mean when I say that the fighting was constant. The Mapuche immediately chose a man named Ian Guillén as their new leader, and he retreated to an inaccessible swampy area, immediately organizing a new army. His rebellion lasted 5 years before he died in battle. The attacks don't stop until 1598, about 60 years after Valdivia had first set off from Peru. The last one of these attacks is sometimes referred to as the destruction of the Seven Cities, and among those seven destroyed settlements were Penco, Villarrica, and Valdivia. So basically the same places which were being fought over by Lautaro. After all that time, the Spanish were once again driven back to the Santiago region, just as they had been during the First War. 50 years after that, there was another big uprising, which put an end to the conflict for another 70 years, until in 1723, there was another one. As I mentioned last episode, some of the Mapuche still resist the control of Chile's government today. At some point I will return to the subject and tell the stories of these later wars and rebellions. Valdivia and his colonists had seen Mapuche territory as the most appealing in Chile, and they probably planned to make it the heartland of their colony. If it wasn't for the fierce resistance they faced, this area probably would have been the centre of modern Chile as well. As it is, although their southern settlements did eventually survive and still exist today, Santiago remained the capital, pretty much because of the Mapuche. The conquest of Chile, then, was a victory for the Spanish, but a qualified one. The colony will grow, but it won't have the importance of places like Peru or Mexico. It would be run as part of the Viceroyalty of Peru until 1573, when it was given autonomous status. Technically, it was still under the control of Lima, but in practice, it reported directly to Spain on many issues. Valdivia's vision mostly came to fruition, even if he didn't live to see it. His successors, however, never managed to extend their colony down to the bottom of the continent, as he had been so determined to do. When we talk about the Spanish conquest of Chile, we're only really talking about the northern two-thirds. If you've enjoyed this episode and you want to do something to help the podcast, one thing which is really useful is if you're able to leave a review wherever you get your podcast from. It helps new people discover the podcast. If you really, really enjoyed it and you're feeling generous, it is possible to leave a small donation. There's information about how to do this in the episode description. A huge thank you to everyone who's done one of these things already. And thank you to everyone for listening.
You've been listening to the Latin American History Podcast, written and recorded by Max Sargent. For more information, visit the website www.maxsargent.com/thehistoryoflatinamerica. And that's spelled MaxSergeant. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in contact at historyoflatinamericapodcast@gmail.com. You can also find the Facebook page by searching for the Latin American History Podcast. The Twitter handle is @HistoryLatinAM. And if you've liked the show, you can help out by leaving a review on iTunes. Alternatively, if you visit the website, you'll see that each episode is accompanied by relevant photos. Most of these are my own, taken during my time in Latin America. All these photos and more are available to purchase as prints at my Etsy shop. You can find this at www.etsy.com/maxsargentphoto. That's spelt www.etsy.com/maxsergeant photo. Thanks for listening.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.